Hey folks, in this interview, it's all about visual storytelling. This is TWIP. Hey, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today on the show, a little something different. Normally, as you know, we talk about still photography and various tangents off of that topic, including gear and technique and all that. But very rarely do I have a cinematographer on the show that can talk to some of the things that are facing cinematographers and that sort of brand of image maker. Joining me today is Lee Herbert. He is a visual storyteller, as I kind of said in the intro. And Lee is going to be sort of, we're going to shoot the breeze about some techniques that photographers and videographers specifically can use to tell stories and what the process is. You know, what are some of the holes that people miss when they're trying to still tell stories, whether it be corporate video, whether it be wedding video, etc. So this is going to be an exciting conversation. I think continuing the trend over the years, we've been leaning on This Week in Photo more and more towards, it's all about the story and it's less about the gear and, you know, all the bells and whistles. It's more about, you know, like the cavemen had it, the writings on the wall of the cave, right? So Lee Herbert, welcome to the show, man. Welcome back. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's funny. Just something you said at the beginning there, you know, it's going to be a little different. I am little and different, so perfect.
Yeah, no, this is good. Yeah, we're all a little different. It's okay. We're all different. But that's good. So, for the people, you've been on TWIP a couple times, several times, actually. For the people that may not be familiar with Lee Herbert, give us the quick elevator pitch as to who you are.
So quick elevator pitch. I worked in the Apple world for 10 years as a Final Cut Pro trainer. And through that, I started doing a lot of video production. I really enjoyed the video production. So decided to start my own video production company 5 years ago now. And so, yeah, we focus mostly on corporate stuff. But I, for my sins, I did do 2 years of weddings. Wow. Moving more into documentary stuff for TV and film now, but still do a lot of corporate work as well.
Nice, nice. And you clearly enjoy it because you're still doing it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I'm looking forward to the point where I get to the point where I can hire someone else to do the admin side of things.
Yeah.
And I can just turn up and be creative. We're not quite there yet, but we're well on our way.
Do you really want to be that guy, though? Do you really want to be the, you know, you kind of like the Andy Leibovitz, you just storm in at the, you know, after everything's ready to go and press the shutter button?
Yes, I do.
It's like, yes, Frederick, yes, I do.
Yes. I want a purple fedora and pink glasses and I want to look weird and just everyone goes, oh yeah, he just pushed the button. He earned $1 million.
There you go. I mean, kind of like a, yeah, that would be an Annie Leibovitz kind of storm in and be the prima donna, right? Let's talk about the topic du jour of today, and that's, you know, the visual storytelling. I'm excited to talk about storytelling because I think, as you know, you and I have talked before, you know, it seems like that is one of the missing components in photography in terms of, you know, there's this massive influx of people coming into the world of photography, into the hobby and the art form and the business of photography, and they're learning, you know, f-stop, shutter speeds, ISO, composition. I want mirrorless versus full frame. I want drones. I want, you know, Steadicam. All that kind of supporting actor stuff. They're learning and buying and doing all that stuff. But the storytelling seems to be, you know, not even secondary. It's almost, you know, like fourth on the list of things that people pay attention to. Where do you put it on your list, Lee? Where is storytelling in? Because you're in that world. You have all those things I mentioned. Yeah. Where do you put storytelling in the hierarchy of things that Lee Herbert, you know, pays attention to?
It's number one or two, depending on the situation. And here's why. It's actually, particularly in the corporate world, you know, one of the taglines for my company, I think it's actually still on our website, is people don't connect with businesses. People connect with stories. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we talk to companies about when they come to us asking to do a corporate video is we say to them, okay, cool, what's your story? Because, you know, people aren't going to connect with a table. But if there's a cool story behind how you made that table or why that table is good for people or important for people, it's that story that people will connect with. You know, you talk about photography. One of my favorite forms of photography is street photography. And I think the reason why I love street photography so much is that it's a lot easier to tell a story in street photography. You know, you'll generally have a person or a subject or something in there, and there'll be multiple elements within the frame. And you can either tell a story, or people watching it can sort of imagine their own stories. I think story is super important, because that's people engage with it. If it's you think about it, like I did stand up comedy for 15 years. I'm not funny anymore. And you know, one of the things we talk about there is you know, there's sort of two different kinds of comedians. There's comedians who just tell gags, and there's other comedians who tell stories, like people like Billy Connolly. Mm-hmm. And he tells a story that happens to be funny. And people engage with that a lot because they want to see how the story ends and how it begins, and you get involved with the characters. And yeah, I could go on about story forever, because I think it's such an essence of human communication.
Yeah, and I love that parallel with comedy that you drew, because as I think back through it, most of the good jokes that I've heard are little stories, right?
Exactly.
Even most of the good comedy routines, stand-up comedy routines that I've seen, there are many stories, and the better comics, and you tell them you're a professional, so the better comics I've noticed, they tie the jokes together so that, you know, they sort of plant a seed at the beginning of the routine, and then towards the end, that seed has flowered and they return to it. So then you're like, yeah. Wow, okay, that's brilliant, right?
Yeah, that's called a callback, and those are always I love callback gags, and they're really hard to do, but when they're done well, they're fantastic.
Is there a way to do a callback type gag or a callback technique within video? You know, I know like in movies, is it foreshadowing and that sort of thing, or like in this kind of video, the microcosm of like say corporate video, wedding video, can people do that?
I think there can be, like, for example, the challenges, it would be quite subtle. So for example, in a wedding video, let's say the bride is very excited about a particular element of her dress, or let's say she's excited about something that they're doing special with her hair. So you could take sort of tiny little detail photos and have that as part of, sorry, videos or photos. You could have that as part of the early images of the story that you're telling, but then you have the big reveal at the actual event and after the ceremony or during the celebration, and then you sort of see, okay so they were showing us these little elements because it's part of this whole elaborate presentation or something that was happening at the wedding.
Yeah.
I actually think weddings are probably easier to do than corporates, because corporate, it's sort of dependent on the product and the story that you're telling, whether there's enough of something there that you can do something like that.
Yeah, and I think people are becoming more and more sensitive to that, you know, especially with this whole, you know, Netflix binging sort of society that we're in now, because, you know, you sit here and we did it over the weekend. You binge several episodes of a Netflix series. Each one of those series is self-contained, and they have those callbacks and foreshadowing and all that stuff within the series, within the one episode. But then they use it over the series as well. So like towards the end of the episode, they call back to something that happened in episode one or two, and they close that loop. You're like, oh, that's why they showed the oatmeal, right?
well, that's actually it's and if anyone likes sort of mystery, like murder mystery sort of things, close your ears now, because I'm going to give you a spoiler for murder mysteries for the rest of your life. Basically, if you're watching pretty much any of those 1 hour murder mysteries, you know, Murder, She Wrote, whatever, I'm showing my age now, but anything like that, if they introduce a random character that has a speaking role early on, like the janitor comes in and says something, he did it. because like there's no reason for that random, not that important character to get a speaking part in the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that brings up a good point. And this is a point that I had on my list to talk to you about. So you perfect segue. In today's cinematography or television or whatever, you know, movies, etc., most of the plot lines, you know, seem formulaic. I know there's the whole hero's journey flow. So if you know about the hero's journey, you could probably say, oh, okay, he's in this part of the hero's journey. Oh, he's not, he's going to resist the challenge and then accept it, you know. So you can see these patterns if you know that. But even if you don't know that, you can look at some of these television series and you can see like, oh, okay, that guy, that's they're together, but they're going to sleep together later. And then he's going to end up getting jealous. And at the end, she's going to kill him. And then the police are going to be, you know, you can see what's going to happen within the first 15, 20 minutes of a hour and a half long movie. Why is that? You know, why? It seems like I understand. It feels lazy to me, you know, and this is me as a consumer speaking, because it feels like there are a gazillion stories out there in the world for people to tell, right? And it feels like that storytellers, the professional storytellers, fall back on these tropes over and over again with different clothes and different music and different, you know, is that just the way it is, or is it just laziness? What do you think?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think number one, I think because there's so much more media today and we're all bombarded with so much more media today, we're more aware of it.
Yeah.
You know, 200 years ago, there are only, you know, 50 books that came out every year. So that was it kind of thing. Whereas now, you know, we're watching 200 movies a day sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Also, follow the money. It's unfortunately a lot of times it's, you know, TV executives or film executives going, well, that film went really well, we want another version of that, but make it with dolphins,
right?
You know, so right. So a lot of times, I mean, think how many reboots there've been in the last 5-10 years. It does feel a little bit like, you know, the people who are paying, because at the end of the day, the people who are paying are the ones who get to have the final say in terms of what gets made and what doesn't. But I think it is a challenge for storytellers, because there are only so many stories to be told. And because we're seeing so many more and more stories, those little gotchas are getting harder to do because a lot of them have been done. You know, again, if anyone hasn't seen, now I've forgotten the name, but the Bruce Willis movie where The Sixth Sense, if you mm-hmm. haven't seen it, again, don't listen for the next thing. you know, there's a big spoiler at the end. But now they've done that spoiler. So the next one that does something similar to that, you're kind of like, oh, is this going to be like The Sixth Sense?
Yeah.
So you sort of, we're seeing so much that it's hard to surprise us anymore.
Yeah. The Sixth Sense, Ghost, you know, that ilk of film. But I don't know. Maybe that's the challenge, right? So the challenge is to do something out of the ordinary that people haven't seen before. And that's not to say that it hasn't been done, because I've seen really... Yeah, and I'm going to throw this at you. So Netflix, again, going back to the Netflix reference. Do you have Netflix? Do you use it?
Yep.
Okay. So looking at Netflix and the original productions that Netflix is producing versus what they produced, you know, a couple of years ago, night and day. I mean, these series are like, some of these I would have purchased on their own or even go. We were talking last night, I forget which one we were watching, but we were watching one it seemed so well done that we were like, I would have gone to the theater to see this. Mm-hmm. And so Netflix seems to be crushing, and it seems like they can think out of the box. They can get out of that, you know, that ditch of creativity. How are they able to do it and other folks aren't able to do it?
Well, I suppose to begin with, they're coming from it from a – I think they look at themselves more as a tech company rather than a creative company. And so tech companies, at least I think the good ones, are always realizing that they have to reinvent themselves, because if you don't – reinvent yourself, someone else will reinvent whatever you're doing and then put you out of business.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Netflix is coming with that mentality. And whereas you look at other places, you know, you look like Disney, for example, they do amazing stuff, but Disney might think of themselves as, we do the kid stuff, we do the family entertainment, we don't do anything out of that space. Whereas Netflix were like, no, we do everything. We want to get, you know, we're selfish. We want to grab everyone. So, yeah, if we're going to do some adult content, we're going to do some kids content, we're going to do some – I mean, the documentaries, I really want to get a contact in Netflix, because if anyone from Netflix is watching, call me. I've got some ideas.
Yeah, please do get in there. They need you.
Well, you see, it's interesting because – so I can't talk about it in too much detail, but I'm working on a project at the moment that's going to be produced for television, all that kind of stuff. And one of the producers that I'm partnering up with, he gave me a really great insight. He said, whenever you think of an idea, you know, if you want to get it made, think about what TV network would have that on and what TV network is going to fund that show in order for it to be made. So if you've got a great idea for a political documentary, well, Science Channel's got no interest in that. And, you know, NBC might not be interested, but PBS might want to make it, but then PBS might not have the budget to do it and all that kind of stuff. Whereas it's funny when I think of – basically any time that I think of an idea for a documentary that I think this is a really cool story to tell, I think people would be interested in hearing the story, but I'm not sure who would pay to have it made. My fallback is always like, you know what, I bet Netflix would do it because they seem to want to do every story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's another good segue into bringing it full circle. So taking the storytelling idea and bringing it down to a saleable sort of corporate videography or wedding thing, you know, part of the, you know, as you've said, part of the beginning of the process is creating a brief, right? Creating a good brief and having that conversation with the client so that you're both on the same page and you know what you're doing and they know what you're doing. Tell me about that. Like, because most photographers, I would argue, you know, and if we, not to pick on the wedding photography genre, but the wedding photographers, I'm going to pick on them, that the wedding photographers, you know, the brief is essentially the contract and the initial meeting. Like, okay, what do you want shot? I want to make sure I get Aunt Sally and Uncle Joe and all that. And, you know, and this is my style. I'm going to shoot like this. And these are the deliverables. You're going to get these within a number of weeks after the event. And you got to pay me. All those details are handled in that contract/brief. Is that enough? Right. Is that, should they be going further, you know, considering this conversation about storytelling? Should they be talking about, okay, what kind of story do we want to tell at your event? Or am I just documenting it for prosperity?
Yeah. So
Prosperity. Did I say prosperity? One of those.
You said a word with a P. I wasn't.
One of those. I don't know.
It's difficult with weddings because, again, you sort of fall back to, at the end of the day, what the client wants is what you should give the client, sort of thing. Having said that, we are the creative, inverted commas, professionals. So it's up to us to sort of help guide the client through that process. So with weddings, I think it's actually a little bit easier because pretty much any person who's getting married has seen a wedding video and probably has an idea of what they want. And they've gone to, you know, your website, they've gone through a couple of other websites and they've seen styles and they like this style, they don't like that style and so on. With corporate, it can be a little bit more challenging because, and this is something that I sort of talk about, is that very often a client will come to me and go, oh, we need a video. And if you say to them why, they go, oh, because we want to put it on our website. You're like, okay, but no. Why? Like, what do you actually want to achieve from this video? Like, is it to sell something? Is it to explain something? Is it to build your brand? Then you have to get into, like, what is your actual brand? And you'd be amazed how many companies, if you said to them, what is the why of what it is that you do, they wouldn't give you they wouldn't have a good answer right off the bat.
Yeah.
So often, you know, we have to be marketing professionals as well as just cinematographers or videographers or whatever you want to call us. You know, it was interesting. I was having a conversation with someone the other day and they gave me this really, so a little bit of background, something that I've started doing in the last 2 years. I went back and looked. I had a bit of a quiet patch for a while where work was coming, but it wasn't coming in at the pace that I was sort of expecting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my work is word of mouth and networking. So a lot of the work is, the more work I do, the more work I get, because as I'm doing more work, those clients are talking to other people and someone says, oh, we need a video. Oh yeah, talk to Capture Inc. and so on. So I went back and looked at sort of 10 of the projects that I'd worked on in the last year and seen how my clients were using them. And to my dismay, a lot of them really weren't doing much with the videos that we'd done for them. Mm. You know, they'd chuck it up on the YouTube channel, they'd chuck it up on Facebook or Instagram, what have you. They'd had, you know, a couple of thousand hits or what have you, but it really wasn't, you know, and I looked at that and went, you know what, that's actually, yeah, I could turn around and say, well, their marketing department's not very good and they didn't do it right, they didn't use it. But at the end of the day, if they're not coming back and getting me to do more work for them because they haven't seen value in the work that I've done for them, whether it's their marketing department's fault or not, I'm the one who's not getting more work.
Yeah.
So
right.
So it's up to me to try to make sure that my clients get the best value out of what it is that I'm doing for them, so that when they see value, they'll come back and get more stuff done. So I actually came up with this document that I sent to all of my clients called Getting to Know You.
Mm.
And what it is, it's a list of questions that tries to get them to understand the why of, first of all, their brand, but also what it is we're trying to achieve with the video or multiple videos or campaign that we're doing for them. And, you know, it's fairly simple. It's not a lot of questions, about 10 questions. Actually, it was 9, but I'm just about to add one, because this friend of mine, I had a meeting with a creative director last week, and he's been in the industry for ages, and he gave me this really great insight where he said, don't ask a client who their customer is. Ask the client who their customer isn't.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Because if you say to a client, okay, well, we're going to make a video campaign, who's your demographic that you want to talk to? They'll go, oh, 18 to 35, you know, earning this much money, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know, they'll probably give you a very wide scope of who it is they want to target. But if you say to them, who isn't your demographic, they'll probably be able to give you a much better answer. They'll be like, well, you know, we make mobility scooters, so people who can walk, probably not our demographic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Things like that. So it's all about working with our clients to try and help them help us to get the best brief possible, so that you can know exactly what it is you want to achieve.
Yeah. So diving in a little deeperly, then you know, if people want to learn more about this stuff, you have a course out that we're going to talk about at the end.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm purposely just skimming the surface like a rock here. But one of the things you talk about in that course is the idea of pulling story out of the footage that you shot. And what we were talking a little bit about before when we started was part of the hard part of doing the stuff that you do is that cutting room floor. Right. Mm. So being able to get rid of that footage that you work so hard to get on the SD card or the CF card or whatever, and then saying, oh, we got to lose that shot, and making those tough decisions while also pulling the story out of what's left. How do you do that? Like, how do you make the call to say, you know what, that beautiful shot of the sunset, gone. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Yeah. So in corporate, it's actually easier, because in corporate, you can sort of, again, if you've done your homework and you've done your prep pretty well at the beginning, you know, you will know very specifically what your client wants to talk about in the video and what your client doesn't want to talk about in the video. So, you know, if the client said, right, well, we just want to talk about our knickknacks, we don't want to talk about our doodahs. Well, if you've got the most beautiful shot that's showing doodahs, well, you can't use it because you need to talk about knickknacks.
Yeah.
You know, so in a corporate sense, it's actually a little bit easier if you've done that work with the client, which, again, why prep is so important and that pre-production stuff is actually super important. Having said that, so then when it comes to the story, it's funny that you talk about that there's sort of formula, and there's definitely a formula with these things. So, for example, in the course that you were talking about, the example that we edit on and that we work on is a corporate testimonial. And those have got a very definitive sort of format generally. The format generally goes with, hi, I'm Dave, and I work for Acme, and we sell widgets. We were having real trouble selling widgets, and we couldn't sell a lot of widgets. Then this other company, insert client name here, came along, showed us how to sell widgets, and now we sell lots of widgets. If you want to sell widgets, you should talk to that company.
Yeah, insert jingle, you know, and music and all that, right?
La la la, yeah, done. It's easy. You don't
it's
need the
easy.
Course.
I can do that on my iPhone. Come on.
So you sort of, as you're editing, you're thinking about that in the back of your mind. You're sort of, okay, well, it's you know, part one is introduction. And you think about this, it doesn't just have to be from a testimonial, but particularly in the corporate video world, it's generally, here's a problem and here's the solution. Those are your two parts. Those are sort of like all you sort of have to do. And I mean, you'll see this a lot in those really cheesy sort of commercials from back in the day, you know, for you know, oh, are you having trouble boiling eggs? Here's this great plastic thing you can buy to boil an egg, and it'll boil.
Oh my God.
Come on, yeah. I can boil an egg. I actually feel for the poor advertising companies that had to come up with those ads, because it was like, you've made a product that helps people do something that they do really easily already. Like, how do we try and make this easier?
Yeah, but I look at those commercials and I think somebody must be buying these, because it's not cheap to run ads, right? So something's paying for those ads.
Look, there's there's no accounting for lazy people. Like, right, you know, maybe there's a lot of people like, oh, yeah, I could boil an egg, but you know what? You're right. Having to put it in the pot and boil the water. Nah, I'm just putting it in the microwave.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to use your whatever Acme egg maker thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about we talked a little bit about B-roll, right? So B-roll, for folks that don't know, well, I'll let you define. I have you on the show. What is B-roll to the people? Like, say you're talking to still photographers, they haven't done any video. What's B-roll? What does that term mean?
So B-roll is, I mean, it comes from the old days where you would have your video on separate tracks, and your A-roll would be sort of like the interview of the video that you've done. And then your B-roll, which would be the one above, would be additional footage. So the easiest way I describe it to clients is I say, we shoot B-roll so that we can make the video more visually interesting. Because if it's just a video of you talking about whatever it is you're talking about for 3 minutes, people are going to turn off because it's just the visual of you just talking on the screen. Yep. So we want to grab footage of what it is you're talking about. So if you say, well, I love putting a glove on my head and spinning around in a chair going, wee! Well, now we need footage of you putting a glove on your head and spinning around in a chair going, wee! And when you're talking about that in the video, we'll hear the audio of you talking about, but we'll see the visual of you actually doing that action.
Do you, speaking of planning, do you shoot the B-roll? So it sounds like you shoot the B-roll after. So you do the, absolutely, you do the interview, wherever and possible, then you make notes, and then you go and capture all the supporting footage. Is that the way it goes?
In a perfect world, yes. But very often we don't live in a perfect world. So sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And that's why with B-roll, I always say you can never have too much B-roll. Yeah. You know, I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yeah.
So like basically if you think, oh, should I get some B-roll of that? You should. But in a perfect world, when there's enough budget, I would have an assistant sitting by while we're doing the interview, taking notes, and everything that the person talks about. Well, first of all, we'll have a list of shots that we need to get from the pre-production and from the brief. So we'll have that. But then also while we're doing the interview, if it's a corporate video that involves an interview, while we're doing the interview, I'll have an assistant, if there's budget, otherwise it's me trying to do 15 things at once, actually taking notes. And as soon as someone goes, oh yeah, I love using my computer, cool, we need a shot of them using their computer. I love using the app, okay, cool, we need a shot of them using the app, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I always think about that when I'm watching YouTube review videos, you know, and those YouTube review videos are typically shot, produced, you know, staffed by one person, right? Mm. And on their MacBook or whatever laptop computer they're using. And I always, because my brain is a dissecting machine, I always wonder, you know, say they're talking about, you know, the new iPhone or smartphone or whatever. Do they record the whole bit first and then listen to it? And like you say, take notes and then go back and shoot B-roll of the different parts that they described? Or do they have the whole thing scripted out and then they just, you know, they do it linearly? Or is it a mixture of the two? What do you think?
I would, the way I would do, and I mean, I do online reviews and things like that. So mm-hmm. I do it both. So I will script it so that I know which shots I need to get and I want to get. Mm-hmm. But then very often I'll have to do some pickups because, you know, when you're talking to camera, you'll have it scripted, but sometimes you'll say something off the cuff and then you'll be like, oh, hang on, I need to get some B-roll of that. But I would say if they're not scripting it or if they're just sort of doing it off the cuff, always do the B-roll afterwards just to save time. It's more efficient because if you think about it, you might shoot 20 things of B-roll, but only talk about 10 of them in the interview. Well, now 10 of those you didn't need to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's so interesting. What are you anecdotally, what are you using for post-processing? I'm guessing Final Cut Pro, considering your Apple background.
Yes. I am one of the few Final Cut Pro Master trainers still left in the world, actually. So
are they a dwindling species? Why is that? Final Cut Pro is so good.
Well, Final Cut Pro, yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, they made it really easy to learn. So, you know, well, you know, look, it's a combination of things. Number one, you know, before Final Cut Pro 10, Final Cut Pro Studio cost $2,000.
Yeah.
So if you bought an app for $2,000, you wouldn't mind spending $1,000 to $2,000 on training on how to use that application. Whereas now it's $300 or $400, you're not going to spend $1,000 to $2,000 to come on a workshop to learn just how to use Final Cut.
Yeah.
So there's a challenge there in terms of just making a living as a trainer, purely training Final Cut. And also since 2011, when Final Cut Pro 10 came out, YouTube has grown and grown and grown, and there is so much material out there to get people started. I will say one of the challenges, and this is totally my bias, kind of going, you know, look, part of my living is made from getting paid to train people, so that's the angle that I'm coming from. So totally get where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
There is a lot of great content available on YouTube to learn how to do things, but keep in mind that it's either not very specific sometimes, and also, and I've seen some tutorials, sometimes people just don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, they're giving out disinformation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why you would then go to some place like Ripple Training, right? Which brings us full circle, because you have a course.
Yes!
You have a course on Ripple Training. And that's kind of why I wanted to bring you on the show, as I wanted to talk about that course. You got a course up there called Visual Storytelling for Corporate Video. So tell me yep. about that course and who it's for and what it's all about.
So first of all, just a little bit of background. I've been following Ripple Training for almost a decade now, and I've always sort of held them up as the gold standard of, like, if you want to learn how to do Final Cut, they are the place to go. Like, I used to hate them because I'd watch their tutorials. I'm like, I really wanted to do that tutorial, but now they've done it, so damn it. so yeah, I couldn't be happier and prouder to the fact that they think that I'm good enough to be one of their trainers and have a course on their site. So there's that. And where this course came from was, I was talking to Steve, who's the one of the guys over there, mm-hmm. and he said, we want to do more courses about not so much the how of editing, we've got plenty of that, but we also want to look at the why. We want to look at the creative decisions and look at what goes into that. So with my background in doing a lot of corporate stuff, it seemed like a perfect fit. So I suggested, well, why don't I take you through how to edit a corporate video, and not so much, you know, push this button, push that button. There's a little bit of that, but this is more about, why do I pick this clip over that clip, and why do we use? And so, to give you like an overview, and I see you're scrolling through it. Mm-hmm. The first sort of 9 or 10 lessons is all about pre-production, because again, I believe that it's really, really important to get all your ducks in a row before you even go out and shoot. Mm-hmm. But then the rest of the course is taking you through the process of, right, well, we've got half an hour worth of footage of an interview. How do we cut that down to 3 minutes? Now that we've got that down to, well, actually, no, sorry, it's 12 minutes. We cut it down from half an hour to 12. We've got 12 minutes. How do we cut that down to 3? And now that we've got that down to 3, how do we get that now under 2? Mm-hmm. So it's going through that whole, okay, look, we've got our story. What bits can we pull out of this to make it shorter? What can we get away with? Okay, we've got that shorter. Now we really, really need to refine this and get it down to the essence of, okay, let's pull everything out that's absolutely not necessary. And there are some hard decisions in there, because this is the thing as an editor, that you've got to take your shooter's hat off and put your editing hat on, and sort of go, you know what, look, I love this shot and I love what my subject is talking about, but it doesn't speak directly to what we have to achieve from this video, so I can cut this out, and I need to cut it out because I need to get this under 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, see that, and for $50. It sounds like that's just sort of the Matrix style injection of how to do this kind of video. You know, it's not going to give you. There's no substitute for, you know, just doing it repetitiously.
Oh, yeah, the more you
over
do,
and over again.
Absolutely.
But there is the idea of, like you said, you could spend hours and hours and days and months on YouTube trying to sift through the seawater just to get a couple of, you know, plankton out, right? Or you could just come here and get a steak dinner and get the whole thing at once kind of injected into your head. So cool, man. I know how meticulous you are, you know, so, you know, this. Yeah. I'm expecting a certain amount of, let's say... I was gonna use a different A phrase, but we'll say attention to detail.
a similar word to that is pedantic.
There you go. That's too many syllables for me. I'm not that smart. No, that's cool.
Yeah, it's I mean, this course took us about 3 months to put together. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty darn proud of, and it was great working with Steve because Steve is just as pedantic as I am.
Yeah.
And so it was great having sort of 2, 3, 4 sets of eyes looking at this thing going, oh, you know what, we haven't covered this properly. We need to re-explain that. We need to re-explain this. So it was really great collaborating with them. Also the subject matter, I think, could be quite interesting to photographers. What we did is I went out and shot an actual project that is up on the client's site for Think Tank Bags, actually.
Oh, cool.
So I've done a lot of work with them in the past.
I can tell. I'm looking over your shoulder.
I like my bags.
Don't feed those after midnight, man.
the big one's in the garage.
Okay.
I had a relationship with them and I sort of went to them and said, hey, would you be interested in we've talked about doing some projects. Would you mind if while we're working on this project, I use this for the course? So we actually, went through the whole process and I got my getting to know you document from them. And yeah, so it's something else I'll add sort of after the edit. We go through also sort of what B-roll I choose and why.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go into a huge amount of that because I don't think people sort of want to watch me go through 200 clips of footage and picking sort of 10 out of those.
Yeah, real time, right?
Yeah. It's, you know what? I tried that and I watched. I got through halfway of recording. I was like, I'm bored now. So no.
Yeah.
And so we found a way, I think, to make it sort of a bit more engaging. But we also, at the end of it, we look at things like adding music. Where do I find my music? And then also some techniques of getting feedback from clients. So there's a product that I'll plug them because it's a great product. A product called Frame.io,
mm-hmm.
And they're a website for getting feedback from clients. Really cool. Like you can upload videos, multiple versions, and when clients give comments, the comments get attached to the video clip at the time code where they put the comments in,
mm-hmm.
and clients can draw around things and do markup and stuff.
And that's synchronized with Final Cut too, right? So you see that inside the app. Yeah.
Yeah, it's synchronized with Premiere as well. So if you're using Premiere, it works with that as well. And it just makes things so much easier sort of going back and forth. And I go through another technique that if you're not going to use something like that, because obviously that does cost money, if you don't want to use something like Frame where you can do it yourself and ways to make that a bit more speedy and more efficient.
Very cool. Well, awesome, man. Well, definitely, folks, you should go check that course out. Where it's on Ripple. So just go to Ripple Training and how do they find it?
Yep. So if they just go to rippletraining.com, click on the tutorials button at the top and go down to production, I think it's, or video production. Yeah, video production, and then it's right at the top there.
So if they just go here, tutorials, video production, and boom, there it is, right? Right there.
Top left, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll just click on that and I'm back to this page. Very cool, man. Well, congratulations on that. You're,
thank you very much.
Yeah, I can tell that you're proud of it.
I am.
Yeah, it's a lot of. I was scrolling for a while getting through the contents of that thing. You put some blood, sweat, and tears into it.
It was actually okay. I'll never put this online, but I am not a one take wonder. I'll just put this out there. When I'm talking live like this, I'm fine. I'm cool. Mm-hmm. But when I have to talk to a specific topic and I have to make sure that I call things by the same name every time, I do struggle a bit with that. And I have to try a few times. Like a little behind the scenes, I'll pull the curtain across. Lesson 1 to 9, I think it was, I was using a teleprompter that whole time.
Oh, nice.
So all of that is done to a teleprompter. And FYI, using a teleprompter isn't that easy, particularly when you've written everything, because you get like sort of 2 minutes into it and a bit goes by and go, wait, your brain's going, oh, no, I know a better way to say that. You say the better way and then you lose your place. You're like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, because we don't write like we speak.
It was so, but the best/worst one was, I was nose to the grindstone, really working hard on this. The first 20-minute take of applying B-roll, I recorded that whole thing and realized that I hadn't turned my wireless microphone on.
Yeah, that's probably not good. Yeah, so yeah. You were kicking yourself. That's like, was that a whole day lost or how long?
Well, no, it, well, it was 20 minutes because I'd recorded that 20 minutes.
Not too bad.
And then it was half an hour because I was so mad at myself that I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go away and I'm just going to sit down and I'm going to breathe for a bit. Time for lunch.
Because
let me tell you, if those mics were working, they would have picked up some words.
Yeah, trust me, my friend.
When I realized that.
We've all made mistakes like that. Normally, my mistakes like that happen when I haven't eaten or something. And I'm just like, you know, why did I do that? Why did I not plug that? I don't understand. Yeah. No, that's cool, man. Well, cool. So, yeah, definitely, folks, head over to Ripple Training and check out Lee's course. The course is amazing. You know, I haven't dived into the course, so I'm saying it's amazing based on knowing you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I know you create amazing work. So definitely, if you're into video at all, definitely check the course out. Otherwise, if people want to connect with you, Lee Herbert, where should they go?
So my website, the company website is capture.ink. So that's my website and there's a contact list there. And on most social medias, I'm just Lee Herbert. So LEEHERBET, just the one R in Herbert.
Herbert, not Herbert, Herbert.
That is correct.
Got it. Yeah, you burned that into my head years ago because I kept mispronouncing your name and now I got it. Cool. All right, man. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always great to catch up with you.
Likewise. Okay, take care then.
Bye.
This is Twitter.